case of the day is Leon V. on behalf of Paige V. versus Health and Human Services. And I should add a thank you to Judge Arterburn. Forgot to acknowledge his presence at our last argument. And with that, Mr. Gilbride, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Ryan Gilbride. I am an Assistant Attorney General with the State of Nebraska. I represent the appellants in this matter. The district court erred by awarding Medicaid waiver services. Medicaid waiver services is a term of art. Medicaid waiver services is different than Medicaid. The disability determination of Medicaid waiver services is just one part of the regulation to determine whether an applicant qualifies for Medicaid waiver services. It was premature for the district court to award Medicaid waiver services because the Department of Health and Human Services had not yet determined whether Ms. Vaquero could live in a nursing facility and whether she had the needs that she had to be in a nursing facility and whether she could be safely served at home. And these are determinations that need to be made under Medicaid regulations for an individual requesting Medicaid waiver services. Waiver services is basically part of Medicaid where it waives the requirement that you have to have the income part met. In this case, Ms. Vaquero, her parents made too much income in order for her to qualify for Medicaid on the traditional side. So you can apply for waiver services, which is another program that's offered by the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, in order to qualify for that, you have to have nursing facility level of care. So otherwise, you would be in a nursing home unless you can have services provided to you by the department that would be provided to you safely in your own home. And in this case, when the court decided to go ahead and say Medicaid waiver services in its remand, that was too far because under the regulation, you have to have a required to be waiver services that could be met at a cost in the cap, and that's under 480 Nebraska Administrative Code, Chapter 5, Section 002.
Where in your opinion did this case go off the rails at the trial level?
Well, what I think is, and the state is not contesting, the determination that this individual was disabled for purposes of Medicaid eligibility.
Okay, so in the state's position is she's eligible for Medicaid.
Under the waiver.
Under the waiver, but those things that have to be accomplished prior to getting eligibility as the waiver have not yet taken place. Is that a simple understanding of it?
Yes.
And so that you think that the trial judge misunderstood the object of the litigation?
No. The only issue at the administrative hearing, Your Honor, was whether or not Ms. Vaquero was disabled for purposes of Medicaid eligibility. The trial court determined that yes, and it's a preponderance of the evidence standard. And the trial court determined yes, I find Ms. Vaquero is eligible for Medicaid.
And you all don't dispute that piece of the finding at the trial level?
As far as
at the intermediate appellate court level, right?
Yes, as far as the qualification for waiver. Now, under, if you will, traditional Medicaid, Ms. Vaquero is over income because her parents made too much money. But then after the application was submitted and she received notice that she made too much money, what happened next is they asked, well, can we receive Medicaid under waiver services? And that's a different analysis under that regulation I just told the court about. And the department, when it analyzed whether or not Ms. Vaquero was eligible for waiver services, it went to the first prong of that regulation and found that she was not disabled for purposes of Medicaid eligibility, so it denied the application.
And they didn't go, the administrative level, they didn't go through the next four.
Correct.
Standards, right?
That's correct. There okay. was no
so
evidence.
So there has been no finding at the administrative level with respect to findings 2 to 5 under Chapter 5002.
Yes.
Out of the five, the litigation has only focused on number one. That's all we know so far. Is that a fair statement from the record?
Okay. Yes.
Did the district court judge think she was making those necessary three other findings? And can that be implied from her ultimate opinion?
I don't think so, because there wasn't anything else in the record to make those sort of determinations. Like, there wasn't anything in the record, Your Honor, about whether Ms. Vaccaro should be in a nursing home or whether the home that she currently resides in Omaha, Nebraska, would be safe to her to have services in. And so when the district court said Medicaid waiver services, that would trigger that she would get to live in the home rather than be in a nursing home. And we don't know if she needs to be in a nursing home or whether her home is safe.
None of that's worked up.
That's correct.
As a factual matter.
That's
so
correct.
So what would be, and also your brief seems to imply that if the child were ultimately found eligible for the waiver services, retroactivity is available.
That's another thing we don't know yet. I think it would be more appropriate for, if the district court would have simply said, I remand to the department to conduct further evidence, something to that effect, rather than the more specific, I think that that would have been better, because there's additional tests under the regulation. At the point that she applied, she was over income, but you can apply for Medicaid again. So right now, I just think that remand that would reverse the order of the department regarding Medicaid for purposes of disability, for purposes of determining Medicaid, and then find that she was disabled, and then remand to the department for further proceedings in accordance with the disability finding.
Is all the necessary evidence already in the record?
As far as determining waiver services, Your Honor?
Yes.
No. We need to have evidence regarding whether she could be safely provided services in the home, whether there is a consent. One of the tests is you have to be explained the difference between being in a nursing home and getting waiver services.
But I thought you couldn't do a consent until you had the initial eligibility statement.
That's correct.
So if I was to try and make a chronology, wouldn't we start customarily with the eligibility finding? And then work up to consent, and then work up to the finding, and then work up to the nursing home and go through the list.
Well, there is a regulation on that, and that is at the discretion of the department, and that wasn't brought up at the administrative hearing either, but that's about presumptive waiver eligibility. Once the department gets an application, it may see that this individual is presumptively presumed to be eligible for the waiver, but that wasn't done in this case, and that wasn't...
That's not the track you all are on.
No.
Right?
That's correct.
And the petition at the district court is asking to be declared waiver eligible, not merely eligible, but waiver eligible. Do you think that fed into what the trial court thought was on deck?
Yes.
And was there some explanation given at the trial level as to the distinction?
I don't think there was. I think it was just whether or not Ms. Vaccaro was disabled for purposes of determining Medicaid eligibility.
Okay. And thereafter, the holding, the finding was broader. Is that a correct statement?
Yes.
Which you all brought to the trial court's attention in a motion for rehearing. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the recommendation for your remand that's included in your motion for rehearing, would you find that satisfactory if the court were to believe all your arguments?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Mangiamelli?
Yes.
Good morning to
Very
you.
Very good. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Ann Mangiamelli, and I'm the attorney for the appellee, Paige Vaccaro, and her family. I'd like to clear up some of the facts that were brought up by the appellant when he was talking about saying that they hadn't indicated that there couldn't be payment back to the date of retroactivity. Your Honor brought up the fact that they did a motion for rehearing, and in their motion for rehearing, they specifically stated that they could not pay back to October of 2016 if the court found that she was Medicaid eligible at that date because of regulations. This case is really about the failure of the Department of Health and Human Services to a little girl and her family. It's a failure that is directly brought about by the fact that they didn't follow their own regulations with regard to assigning a service coordinator and developing the plan at the same time that Medicaid eligibility was being done. The other fact I'd like to clear up is the appellant stated that they did not apply for Medicaid waiver until after their Medicaid was denied as a result of them being over income, which is actually not correct. They applied for Medicaid in October, and the income determination wasn't made until January. They applied for Medicaid waiver in November of 2016. So they actually applied several months before Social Security determined that they were over income. Their position has been a bit inconsistent in their brief, so I'm going to argue what I think their position is based upon what is in there, which is that they should not have to pay, assuming that Page is found Medicaid waiver eligible back to October 6, 2016, which is what the district court found, that they should not have to pay back to that date, and in fact, shouldn't have to pay until sometime in the future when a service plan is put in place. If the court in this instance reverses the district court, it will go beyond an impact on this particular family and will actually impact every future family who's denied Medicaid waiver by the department. For these reasons, I would argue as follows. First, the department's failure to comply with Medicaid waiver regulations precludes them from relying on those same regulations to deny waiver eligibility back to October 2016.
So let me understand your legal argument based on the administrative code.
Yes.
Where do you find in the code that there are all these things should be happening simultaneously rather than one thing after another?
So, Your Honor, if you look at 480 and Nebraska Code 5003A3, there is an indication in that particular statement that within 14 days after a Medicaid waiver application is received, a service coordinator will be assigned, and that person will go out, assess, gather information, assess whether the person meets the nursing facility level of care, and then at that point do a service plan. They are also at that point supposed to contact Medicaid waiver staff and determine whether the child is presumptively eligible for Medicaid waiver. And anybody who files a Medicaid waiver application can be presumed Medicaid waiver eligible as long as it is also shown that they're going to comply with that process or they're willing to comply with that process. In this instance, they did the Medicaid waiver application in November of 2016. No service coordinator was ever assigned to them and actually never met with them. So actually what our position is, the reason that none of the things are done that they are now saying that they can't go back and pay to October of 2016 is because they didn't follow their own regulations with regard to assigning service coordinator who was supposed to be determining whether she was the nursing facility level of care and developing the service plan at that point. In fact, had those things been done and a presumptive eligibility been determined, it would have locked in her Medicaid waiver eligibility date even through all of these appeals back to October of 2016. What they're now
but does
doing,
that make it unavailable in future proceedings?
Is
retroactivity necessarily unavailable?
It is our opinion that it is not, based upon the regulations and Medicaid in general. I believe that it is their opinion that retroactivity is unavailable because a service plan was not put in place. Our position is the service plan wasn't put in place because they didn't follow the regulations by assigning the service coordinator and by doing the assessment within 14 days of that application, which was never done.
I didn't understand the state's position to be that retroactivity would never be available, but only that that determination can't be made until a finding has made about items 2 through 5. And so if this is remanded to determine whether your client can meet findings 2 through 5 and retroactivity is available after those findings have been made, is your client harmed in any way by that?
It is my understanding, and that's why I stated that I believe that their briefs have been a bit inconsistent, because in the reply brief they do seem to indicate that they can pay retroactively.
But well, I think the state has conceded that.
They filed, and the
that's
reason
what
that
we
I
are, that's what we know here. We got a reply brief. That's the position
that the state
of the parties.
They've conceded that they can pay back to October of 2016, determining eligibility.
Right.
The court also asked the question of the appellant about whether the court, in the district court level, had enough evidence to determine a nursing facility level of care. What the order said in that instance was she indicated that she had read the administrative all of the administrative records, which is everything that the SRT, the state review team, was given. And based upon all of that information, she determined that Paige was Medicaid waiver eligible, and then asked the court, and then remanded it back for payment. So I believe that although she didn't go into specifics, she did indicate that she had seen the administrative record, she had all of the medical records, and that at that point she was making the determination that that Paige was Medicaid waiver eligible.
So it wasn't worked up, in your view, it wasn't worked up adequately at the administrative level, but nevertheless the administrative file came to the district court and she concluded it's all there.
That is correct.
Which one is it? I can't follow you.
I would agree that the administrative level did not go through the nursing facility level of care. It was brought up in the district court and actually prayed for by the appellee at the district court level, asking the court to make that determination and also asking the court to then remand it back for payment. That wasn't objected to until the motion for rehearing was filed after the court already made their determination. So there was notice that we were asking for Medicaid waiver determination.
Is it your position now that you don't need any further hearings?
Your Honor, our position would be that the only further hearing we would need, it would be for the administrative level to determine what would be appropriately paid from and after October of 2016. When Medicaid itself is being determined, there's that 90-day retroactivity period, and at that point, it is determined at the administrative level what in those 90 days should have been covered. So what we are saying is
I get the feeling that you were both parties were at a different hearing.
Well, and in reading the briefs, I somewhat felt that as well, because the motion for rehearing, we thought that they filed in the district court before filing this appeal, we thought was very clear that they were indicating they could not pay, but the reply brief seems to indicate that they can. So if that has been conceded, I am fine with that. What we are asking is this court to uphold, because we believe that the district court did indicate by, you know, she indicated by preponderance of the evidence that she had seen the administrative level, she had all the medical records that were presented to the SRT, and based on those medical records, she made a determination that Paige not only met the Medicaid disability standard, but that she should have been Medicaid waiver eligible as of October of 2016, and that they should pay back.
How about, is there a consent form that's been signed in this matter?
There was not a consent form signed, and that is part of our argument with regard to the court indicated earlier when you were talking to the appellant that you were indicating that it seemed like to be steps, like Medicaid was the first, determination of Medicaid was the first step, and then nursing facility level of care. What we have argued in our brief is these are not steps, that they are actually all to be done simultaneously by two different organizations.
So if you look at 5003B4C, with respect to the waiver, it says, note, the waiver consent form is not valid and must not be signed until the child's eligibility for Medicaid has been determined, stuff, right? So that sounds to me more sequential than simultaneously, that you had to have a eligibility for Medicaid determined before a valid waiver consent form.
Except there's two other sections in that would be contrary. The one section, which is the 5003A3, which indicates the service coordinator to be assigned determining the nursing facility level of care.
Is that the one that says refer this to folks to work it up? Is that more of a referral?
No, it actually is within, it's not only in, it's not the referred to work it up, it is to a service coordinator supposed to be gathering information and meeting with this family to determine whether the child meets the nursing facility level of care. But if you also look to the regulations, at the very end, after it goes through all of those, it indicates that the service coordinator at some point is supposed to contact the waiver Medicaid eligibility staff to determine whether the child has already applied for Medicaid. So if the waiver staff is already supposed to be in place and contacting to see if Medicaid has even been applied for, it doesn't make sense then that is a sequential process, because if the service coordinator is already in place, they would have to be in place. Your Honors, we would ask that you would uphold the district court, that you would remand back only ordering that the child is Medicaid waiver eligible as of October of 2016, and for the administrative level to determine what are appropriate that should be paid for from and after that date.
Now, you did not file a cross appeal with respect to the denial of your request for attorney fees, is that correct?
We did not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute and 35 seconds.
1 minute and 35 seconds, Mr. Gilbride.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to underline the point that the plain language of the Medicaid regulations do not require a simultaneous Medicaid and Medicaid waiver eligibility determination.
Do they allow it?
It is allowed, but it wasn't discussed at the agency level or the district court level, and therefore I don't know that it would be before the court under Haas v. Neff.
Wasn't the battle at the agency disabled or not disabled?
Yes.
And that's why it went up to the district court.
Correct.
And then, in addition to saying disabled, the district court said, and blah, 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 next steps. And that's where we got ahead of things.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Has the state started taking steps, started moving towards these subsequent steps that need to be taken?
I don't know the answer to that. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is Patterson versus...